Welcome back to the show. Let's talk to Matt Yeats, a quantitative investment manager for Seven Investment Management. Matt, very good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Good morning to you guys.
Right, so let's talk stock market rallies, going up forever. Everyone said it was going down after Brexit, and the clever people have got it totally and utterly wrong. How much higher can we go?
Myself included, not in being a clever person, but in terms of calling it... calling it up. I think it's really strange, isn't it? I think not just stock markets. I think if you look across, I suppose, capital markets, pretty much the only place as a UK-based investor you could have gone wrong, really, was holding in cash. And I think, really, a lot of people into Brexit, that was exactly what they were holding. You know, the traditional answer to uncertainty is, OK, if you're not kind of sure where to kind of stick your pieces, you can always run to the safety of cash. But we've had this strange environment, really, where we've had... yields kind of being further depressed, so fixed income assets going up in the inverse direction, and stock markets going up at the same time. But when thinking about why stock markets are going to be, it's quite strange to me to think, you know, what are the actual fundamental drivers of the current stock market rally? I suppose traditionally you kind of have two sides, I suppose. Kind of, is it earnings? Is it the fundamentals of these companies have got kind of significantly better overnight? I think certainly in the FTSE 100, you could argue that for a few of the stocks where there's kind of, foreign-denominated assets being kind of revalued back to sterling, which is depreciated, that's a fundamental reason. But the other reason is, I suppose, the risk premium and the global risk premium. And the rally's been so universal almost kind of across kind of geographies that you kind of think that investors are feeling that there's been a removal of a global risk right at the time when one's staring them in the face. And for me, this is, I think, a bit of a surprise. Certainly in places like Europe and Japan that have been laggards somewhat to kind of the likes of the FTSE 100 in sterling terms this year, that kind of those markets are kind of doing well at all. Because I think there's a lot of background doubt there about whether the drivers that I think investors are tying to can really achieve the positive end. So let's, you know, if you think about Abenomics, okay, and this continued kind of 3-hour, how long have we been waiting to see kind of some kind of resolution that and some breaking away of this tie between devaluation of the yen and kind of rallying in the stock markets? I mean, that's still forthcoming. In Europe, the political risk is kind of higher than ever. You've had a realization of Brexit, okay, and fair enough. You know, straight off the back, there was a Spanish election, which was kind of better than expected in terms of, you know, almost moving away from the populist idea. But the refugee crisis is so far from over. You've got laying in the background this kind of really quite, you know, monumentous Italian referendum on kind of their, you know, the ability, you know, constitutional referendum in Italy on the ability to finally potentially get some politics done in that country. Just off the top of my head, I'm kind of find myself reeling off 3 or 4 kind of big kind of risks that I still see that are out there.
Yeah, but the whole point of a zero interest rate or a negative interest rate environment is that it's very difficult for a company or the banking system or anything else to go bust when you've got rates at zero and the company, the corporate debt just is free to keep going, and also you've got the central banks able to print money at will at zero cost. So it's a perpetual motion machine, and with rates at zero, you can never fall. You've got that safety net there all the time. Whether Trump comes into power, there's a migrant crisis, there's a bomb here, it doesn't matter because everything has financial anesthetic.
So I would agree with that kind of narrative, and I think that's maybe the reason that we're seeing kind of bond yields kind of coming down and investors pricing their expectations of future rate cuts into the bond market at the same time that equities kind of are going up. But you've got to ask yourself, I mean, investors have got to ask themselves, how far can that go? Mm. I mean, the ECB especially, you're kind of almost at the limit of what they can do just kind of in the way that it's set up. They have to buy German assets. They have to buy 25% of their asset purchase have to be German. And they have a flaw in kind of how low they can go in terms of yield. So, you know, with 90% of German bonds at negative bond yields, how much more can the ECB buy? How much further can they go? And I think if investors are pricing, you know, bond markets as though they're going to continue, yields are going to continue to be cut by the central banks, I think they're going to be found wanting eventually.
But isn't it not how much, it's how long? I mean, Japan has shown it can be 25 years. We've done 5 years. So we've got another 20 years of this excitement to go.
I kind of, okay, so against the risks of some of which kind of I've highlighted that are out there, I think then it's kind of how do investors kind of put these things together in portfolios? And I think the very point is that investors can't buy bonds for capital appreciation anymore. Okay, why would you buy a bond kind of nowadays? Okay, so there's two reasons in a traditional portfolio context why do you buy a bond. Okay, one is that it can move and appreciate in value when your equities decrease in value. Just mathematically, that's much, 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 much harder to happen anymore. You know, with bonds priced at negative yields, or even in the States, long-dated treasuries, 10-year treasuries at 1.5%, there just isn't the capital appreciation.
So that asset class, for people don't understand bonds, that asset class has effectively been destroyed.
I would think so. I think it's
The concept is dead.
I think it's very hard to see a reason in my head why people, you know, fixed income assets would continue to be the diversified investors' kind of counterweight to equities in the way that it's been historically.
Right, we're going to run out of time. Let's just have part two of this. In terms of protection, I've come back from sitting in Ibiza for a month, okay? I'm looking at the market at 7,000, 7,200, wherever it ends up, okay? Yeah. What do I do to protect myself?
Well, I think it's... We've talked about bonds. I mean, I just don't think there's the protection there in terms of capital appreciation. And you're not getting the carry anymore to really kind of water down any equity losses that you might get. With interest rates, if the market truly thinks that interest rates are going to stay low for longer, I'm not necessarily the largest advocate of that cause. Gold becomes attractive. But I think really at the moment, some of the places that you could look are the options market. So volatility has been completely kind of squashed in the last month or so. And really that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the VIX kind of on an 11. Kind of,
yeah. We buy the VIX at 11, don't we, Zach?
The first two numbers. So that makes certainly shorter dated protection kind of look kind of really quite attractive and quite cheap, with equity markets hitting all-time highs in the US and the VIX hitting what are historically extreme lows. That looks like one place that investors.
But, I mean, just as reported today, Rothschild has, you know, sold millions or billions worth of shares and is going into gold. Gold seems to be the gold and silver look to be the place.
So I always have a problem with gold because, in you know, being a quantitative investment manager and trying to put something into a model, how do you do your discounted cash flow on gold? How do you work out where your future stream of earnings are going to? Really, gold for me is a complete end-of-the-world scenario thing, which even in that end-of-the-world doesn't have any value. You can pile all your gold up, what are you going to do with it?
But the yield curve suggesting US recession. We could talk about this for ages, but sadly, we've run out of time. I think we should all be buying a few out-of-the-money put options. There you go. That's the thought of Chairman Moose on his soapbox. Right, Matthew Yeats, Quantitative Investment Manager for 7IM. Thank you, as always, for your continued support. Right, that wraps up the 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock show even. We'll be back at 1 p.m. Malcolm Graham Woods, oil analyst, and Malky's blog going through his bucket list. We've got Corfin Cordella, the founder of CCFX, Paul Wallace, trading coach and single stock and major market review, with yours truly, Zach Meir. Have a good day. Thank you.